Joseph.
And I'm Nick.
And this is Fish Jelly.
Oh, yes.
Well, I don't have to ask how you're doing because I know you're sick.
Yeah, I got something.
So we might hear some coughing.
We'll try to turn away from the microphone, of course, in those moments.
But we appreciate you making the effort.
Mm-hmm.
This week is the four-year anniversary of being sent home for COVID.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, March.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember like what that was? Because I remember being told like, oh, we're just going to go home for like a week or two. No need to like take your things home. So like, yeah, we just went home. And then of course things escalated and it wasn't for another year until we could go back into the office. And at that time, we were still living close to my office. So I was one of the ones who were like slowly coming back. And it was like a ghost town, or like some weird incident had happened because everyone had left their stuff thinking that they'd be back. So like I was helping move desks and drawers and or chest of or whatever you call them, the cabinets. And people left food in there. So there were like bugs and rotted food. And like we spent a lot of time shipping things to people because also during that period, people had moved.
Mm-hmm.
Like within 6 months of the lockdown starting, people were like, well, I'm just going to move somewhere I like better. And what a crazy.
That was the week I got my master's. Because we went out.
Oh, that's right.
We went out to dinner and you threw your back out.
Oh, my God. That was such a weird, because then it's like, well, let's start even before the lockdown, because we had both gone on a trip the month before.
Yeah, I was in Berlin.
So you were in Berlin and you were hearing ramblings of.
Yeah.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was on the gay cruise and then there were ramblings about something. And that was also around the time that one ship got stuck out on sea forever. But yeah, so there was already weird stuff happening. And then like right before lockdown, we were celebrating you getting your master's degree.
We had gone to see a press screening for My Spy with Dave Bautista. I remember.
That's right.
And then the next morning, everything changed.
And then we went to our favorite pizza place. And while we're there, I throw my back out.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't move. So did you have to go get my car?
Yes.
I could barely get out of the restaurant to go wait on the sidewalk.
Uh-huh, yeah, and then, I had to go buy you naproxen and then.
Yeah, you had to get me some pain medication. And then you had to go get my, which is very rare that you would drive my car.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's bad.
But I did.
But you did. And then, yeah, what a shitty.
Yeah, because I think the next day we were supposed to see A Quiet Place 2.
God.
And everything's indefinitely canceled. It's like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, not to trigger everyone. I just can't believe 4 years have passed and it kind of feels like this is a new normal. Like being at home working is weird.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate, as are you, but it's still weird. Like I feel like it's affected us a lot in many ways.
Well, it's
good and bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's very isolating.
Yeah. We were very fortunate during all of it for many reasons. So I'm not complaining per se, but yeah, it's just weird like feeling.
I remember like the weekend before you and I were out in West Hollywood and I'm like, we should stay out and enjoy it. I remember that because they would announce that day that they had closed the borders to Italy.
Mm.
And I remember talking to several people that night. I'm like, you should enjoy your night because he was like, no, that'll never happen here.
Ugh, gosh. Yeah, I probably don't want to go down memory lane of, and I'm sure no one wants to go down memory lane of lockdown,
fine.
But I'm glad that things feel normal and, you know, to a degree. And that's all.
Yes.
Moving on to something more negative.
Oh.
I think I'm in a toxic relationship with Neil Brennan and his podcast Blocks.
Yeah, you do like to hate listen.
Oh God, that's what it's called. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. I'm hate listening. I can't stand him, but I cannot not listen. And then I'm thinking, am I just a fucking hater? What's wrong with me? Why am I so obsessed with Neil Brennan? What, even though he makes my skin crawl? And then I realized, I think it's that I'm fascinated with the guests he has on.
Yeah, he's got great guests.
And how they're able to manage a conversation with him. Because if I had to sit and talk to him, it would be a very different broadcast. I would just get so annoyed. So for people who don't know, Neil Brennan is a comedian who's most notable for co-creating the Chappelle Show. And since then, he has done some comedy specials. His most recent Netflix special is called Blocks. And this is where things start to get real, like, annoying to me, because he, as many of us have, suffered from like mental health issues, adjusting to traumas of various natures. And he has gone on like a mental health journey. So sort of in relation, so these comedy special Blocks is about that, like all these things that were blocking him from being happy and getting out of depression, releasing anxiety, blah, blah, blah. So this podcast, he has fellow comedians come on and they write down their blocks and then he addresses them. And this is where it gets real crazy to me. And I would love for like licensed mental health care professionals, I would love to hear what they think about this, because here's this person who has done some therapy. All he ever taught, if you've listened to him or if you haven't, you will know that all he does is talk about how he's done ayahuasca, DMT, and MDMA, and that he considered himself atheist for all of his adult life until he did ayahuasca, which he considers like a God experience. And so now he's not atheist. But every episode is him making it about him and that one time he did ayahuasca, or, you know, like his experience with that one thing, his experiences with DMT and MDMA. And I just don't know how this is a show, but I'm so impressed with the people. I'm assuming the reason it works is because his guests don't listen to him. They probably are approached by their management and they like, oh, we know Neil Brennan or we're cool with him. Right. And they probably listen to a portion of an episode, but they don't realize that this man.
I thought Sarah Silverman's episode was fine.
I think that
there are some fruitful things that come from these conversations. It's just,
I think depending on the guests and their personality, like Sarah Silverman is funny because she, for the guests who come on who are more bold than he is,
yeah,
I think they work well. So she was great because it's almost like he can't outdo her.
Right. Well, she's also very smart and she's already is able to explain why things have happened in her life in a way that she's already learned from these experiences.
Yeah, I think someone like Kathy Griffin.
Oh yeah, that's how you started.
Yeah, that's how I started, because I thought it was interesting, and I like her. But yeah, he's just, I don't know. I don't want to go on a rant.
Wait, who did he have on, the little man that looks like a turtle? That's married to the trans woman.
Oh, Jim Norton.
Jim Norton. There were some interesting things that I feel like a different interviewer, yes, should have been involved with.
Yeah, I don't think he was good with Jim Norton, because all he kept saying, it was like, I don't, like, he just, it felt very like 2000 and late. Like, he's asking Jim questions about, for people who don't know, Jim Norton's married to a trans woman and talks very openly about his sexuality and such. But yeah, Neil just seemed like, well, I don't understand this. I don't understand. It felt like I was listening to someone's dad who doesn't, like, thinks everything is weird. Mm-hmm. Then he interviewed Gabriel Iglesias, I guess he'd be considered plus size.
Oh, I thought he was the fluffy. Something.
He is the one who calls himself fluffy. And the way Neil was talking to him just felt like, God. And then I just get so tired of Neil. Like, I feel like he's one of those white guys who has friendships with Black people. So he feels like he has a pass to, I don't know. He's not out of pocket like some white personalities who have involved themselves in like Black American culture. He's not like that, but I think he just feels real limited. Like you've had these very specific experiences and now you're doing like it's wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah.
Like for every guest and depending on the guest, because some of these people aren't as notable. So I think they feel like grateful to be there and they don't want to challenge him. And then like his most recent guest, who I don't know who this person is, Kyle Kinane, they seem very similar in personality. So that one was a struggle to get through because then they're just talking over each other and disagreeing and, but not in like an exciting way. It was just like, ugh, like a couple of narcissists just running on. I don't know.
It was like listening to that Hot Wings guy interview Theo Vaughn. It's like, oh, they're male bonding.
Although that was really cute.
Yeah.
Because they were both just like, bro, dude, oh, we love it. That was kind of the first time Sean from Hot Ones seemed like he was not just doing a job.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was actually enjoying it.
He was sharing stuff about himself in like an intimate way.
The last time I felt him like that, Sean on Hot Ones, was when he did a Keke Palmer. Mm-hmm. I think he really enjoyed her. But yeah, this. Yeah, I'm clearly obsessed with Neil Brennan. It's unhealthy.
I didn't realize you did because he's on in the car all the time when you're driving.
And I hate it. I'm just listening. I can't stand it. I get so annoyed. He interrupts. This is why I had to stop listening to How Did This Get Made? Because Jason Mantzoukas,
he interrupts a lot.
You know what would blow my car up? If Jason Mantzoukas goes on Neil Brennan's blocks.
Oh, God.
Those two talking, I'd crash my car. I don't think I'd be able to handle it. Two people who have to always inject what they think and talk over everyone.
Yep.
Girl, you doing ayahuasca back when is like, oh, and then Neil Brennan currently listening to him talk about sex and romance is just like, ugh. And then he's 50 and he does that thing that sometimes I do a little bit where it's like, well, I'm old, so what do I know? You know, like, but he, it's like he's doing that thing where it's like, I'm old, but I still know what's up. And it's like, do you? And then him talking about, like, he's not an attractive man. I don't know what's appealing about him. And the way he talks about relationships is like, you haven't had a successful one.
Well, I'd imagine the appeal is his sense of humor and his intelligence. But
and then his current girlfriend is a therapist. And I'm just like, I can't believe that this man.
Does she listen?
I don't know. Well, you know what? Segue to something else.
But what's the spirituality? Like what the drug god that was awakened in his mind? Like, I don't understand.
Ugh. It's just for someone who does seem quite smart, like him explaining.
Yeah, I think I caught the tail end of one of those things, but it didn't. Whatever he was saying did not make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either.
But I guess I haven't experienced that drug, so I don't know.
But I want to manifest something positive speaking about therapists, because I know the last time I put it out there, they had us on their podcast. But I would love for the DSM ladies to review the American Society of Magical Negroes.
Oh my God.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
I would love to hear what they have to say.
Well, I told you, I want to hear what they have to say about that new Lee Daniels movie.
Well, that hasn't come out
yet. It hasn't come out yet, but.
But yeah, we'll manifest that too. But I think for now we need to reach out. The DSM ladies, if y'all are listening, you have to do an episode of the American Society of Magical Negroes. Moving on. Today is the LA Marathon.
And St. Paddy's Day.
Oh my gosh. Today's St. Paddy's Day and the LA Marathon.
Yeah.
Nick runs every day. Have you ever thought about doing a marathon?
I have. I've been asked many times by people and I don't want to have to think about it. I just want to do it for myself.
So the answer is yes, you have thought about
it. I've thought about it and I have not wanted to do it. I also don't want it to, I'm competitive. I feel like it's just something I would spend time ruining myself on. But on St. Paddy's Day's past, I used to make Cole Cannon, remember?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Not today, though.
No, today's not a great day. Oprah resigned from being on the board of Weight Watchers because she recently explained that her weight loss is due to medical intervention. So she felt like it was a conflict of interest to
act like she's eating right.
To act like she's using this weight loss program to have lost the weight that we all see. I mean, she looks fantastic. Oprah has never looked better, and she's 70.
Yeah.
But she, yeah, she didn't say what the drug was. She went on Jimmy Kimmel and talked about it. And she kind of gave a clearly like something that she and her team had worked on, that felt a little clunky about her describing obesity as a disease and that she has that disease. And so no matter what, she did say something. Let me try to find the quote so I don't mess it up. She goes, "You've all seen, I've been in the storm of losing the weight, gaining it back, losing the weight, gaining it back. I listened to what the doctor said. You are always going to put it back on. And it's like holding your breath underwater and trying not to rise. You're always going to rise." I thought that felt powerful. I'm sure people can relate to that who've really, really struggled with their weight.
Yeah.
That no matter what they do, it's going to come back. So she said that understanding combined with back in 2021, she had surgery on both of her knees. And she said that she made a promise to God that if she'd be able to walk after that, that she would do whatever she could to stay healthy. So all of that created this perfect storm, you know, that those things plus the medical intervention, which is some kind of weight loss drug.
And God said, you better let go of Weight Watchers.
And God said, you better slay. So she did. So Oprah's out here slaying. And she, after resigning from the board of Weight Watchers, donated all of her shares to the National Museum of African American History and Culture. So I think as someone who's so super famous and such a huge public figure for so long, and having her weight loss journey be so public, because she doesn't have to explain her health to anyone, but I think it's pretty classy that she's getting in front of it, and she does look great. So good for her.
Oh, except that the octopus in the fridge for Stedman seems very strange.
Oh, Jimmy Kimmel did like a little segment when she was on about Oprah dispelling rumors about herself. And one of them was, is it true you always have like a full octopus in your refrigerator? And she said, yeah, because Stedman eats octopus every day. And he eats it for breakfast with okra. And then Jimmy goes, oh, he really must like things that start with O.
Which is good. But
that was cute.
But that means that the chef, I'm assuming that someone's preparing this food for them, is having to cut away at that corpse of the octopus.
Yeah, when you heard the story, that was the first thing you thought. Like, how are they managing?
Like, is he eating two tentacles and the head? Like, what?
Or is the chef preparing the entire octopus and then he just eats leftovers for a couple days? Or...
Yeah. I don't know.
Very interesting. Okay. Did you see that incident at Precinct last week about someone peeing?
Oh, I did. They posted on Instagram, yeah.
Okay, so are you familiar with the aftermath?
No.
Okay, so Precinct is a gay bar in downtown Los Angeles. It's on Broadway. And last week on Sunday, so 1 week ago today, Precinct posted in their feed.
Yeah, I saw that.
A video of two people peeing at their employee entrance. So the which is a well-lit sort of crevasse off the street. So you see these two people peeing, and they blurred out their penises, but you can very clearly see these two men, and then they're wearing like leather gear, and they unzip their pants and start peeing, and then they walk away. Mm-hmm. So in the post, they said this is, I forget the exact language. People can still read it. It's still on Precinct's Instagram page, but basically like, this is not how you treat like your favorite gay bar.
Yeah.
But then they go on to say that the taller one of the two, because it was like someone who maybe looked Latino and then clearly a white guy, and the white guy was big, like tall. They also say in that post that the white guy proceeded to assault bar staff because they had walked out of Precinct holding 2 full cocktail glasses. So now that they've peed, they are walking on Broadway, and the bar staff go outside to confront them to tell them they can't do that. Mm-hmm. And they claim that the taller one assaulted the manager.
Oh.
And knocked him on the ground.
Oh.
Okay, well, it turns out that taller guy is a man named Chris Kilpatrick. And so the precinct didn't tag this person because they didn't know who it was. In fact, one of the first people in the comments section to tag this person was Willem, the drag queen.
Ooh.
But Chris Kilpatrick is a Crescentia Valley Town Council member. So he's notable. So then a few days ago, the Crescentia Valley Town Council sent out a statement saying that he's resigned. And at first his Instagram was made private, and now it's been totally removed or deactivated. But Kilpatrick's lawyer released a statement saying that the assault is not what they think. And so I had very strong opinions on this because, of course, first of all, I think that it's really reckless for this business to post this video and then make these accusations about this person, because now it seems like a hate crime. Also, like, I mean, who hasn't peed? You know how many times I've peed?
Well,
not in the toilet because I had to go and there's nowhere else for me to go. Like, and also, anyone who's been to downtown LA, where that bar is specifically on Broadway, everyone's peeing everywhere. It just feels kind of like, really? There are probably 3 unhoused people sleeping in front of where they peed currently who are peeing.
But I think it's this is California. You can't just leave the bar with your drinks. Like, everybody knows that.
Okay. You're right. But I also think, like, why did they run out there and try to grab them? Like, to me, it feels like you're trying to be confrontational. And then this is what the man, Kilpatrick, his lawyer said, that his client and his boyfriend thought that they were about to be gay bashed, and that's why he reacted that way.
What?
Well, I don't disagree with that, because let me tell you something. If you and I were walking from precinct down Broadway to my car, and 2 people who are not in uniform, one of whom is Jeremy. So the manager of precinct is this guy who you see every time you're at precinct. His name is Jeremy Lucindo. He's the one who, I guess, was pushed down. He wears street clothes. Uh-huh. And if I saw him on the street, I would not think that he's going to do something to me. If that man who I didn't recognize walked up to me and grabbed my arm or tried, like, I would react too. You're not in uniform. You're not announcing yourself to me. You just run up on me.
Sure.
We don't know the true story because there's no video. I think what's reckless is that you posted this video of people peeing, which seems real messy. And then you make this claim that you were assaulted. But it's like, where's the police report? Where's the video of you being assaulted? And then where are the details of how you approached the person? I just think that all seems real messy. And now you have this gay person who's part of a city council who now had to resign. I don't know. I just think it feels real messy.
The New York Post described it as one of the 2 men who carried out the dastardly crime. This means that's not that big a deal for all of this, but
I don't know. It just seems like, if you're familiar with that bar space, to me, someone peeing at the, like, on the sidewalk.
He wanted to make a point because he probably did push the owner and he got the mad. Manager. Yeah. He got mad. I would be too.
Yeah, but what if you were the customer? What if you walked out of the bar clearly drunk, not realizing you still had a can of Truly in your hand, and some random someone not in uniform just runs up on you? Yeah, I'm gonna knock your ass down. Like you can't just do that. Also, clearly 2 gay men. So it's like, yeah, I'm on edge when I'm walking. You know, this relates to our secret film today, but like feeling uncomfortable, like always having to be aware that I present as gay, I'm in a space where there may be people who react negatively to me, so I have to be on high alert, right? It's not unlike a woman walking down. Like you, if you're a woman walking down, like in downtown, you have to be hyper aware. And so if some man ran up to some woman because he saw that she had dropped her key, and instead of saying, "Excuse me, miss, I think you dropped something," you just run up on her and grab her. If she hit your ass with mace, I'd be like, "Well, why did you run up on her like that? You know that she's vulnerable. That was not the appropriate way." I don't know. Maybe I'm being unreasonable, but I just think that this feels way blown out of proportion.
For sure.
Yeah. And I think that it feels real messy. And then it's like the aftermath of you trying to call out these two people is that another member of this LGBT community that you hold in such high regard has now been let go from public office.
Right.
Not let go, but forced to resign. I'm sure felt obligated. So was it worth it over something that people do all day, every day in front of your bar? If you go out there right now, anyone who cares to do it, it doesn't matter what day, what time, it's going to smell like piss all over that place.
Yes.
It's not like they walked into the Bellagio and went to the flower garden and took a piss.
No, but it's probably how they handled themselves. And I don't know. Like, also, as somebody that is a public figure, technically this person, to me, should be behaving differently as well. No?
You're not wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to defend, I don't know, Chris Kilpatrick, and I don't, but I just think that when I first saw the post on Sunday, I was like, wow, this seems really unprofessional. Also,
there are just things that don't gel with it. Like I'm have these cocktails that I walked to the bar with, and then I thought I was going to be assaulted. It's like,
well, also who's manning the door? Like, so like the other thing is if, because I'm sure if the bar had to respond to why the staff went out there to stop them, they would say, well, California law says that you can't leave. Okay, well, who was manning the door to let these people walk out with full cocktails?
Well, true.
Like, shouldn't there be someone watching who's leaving? You let two whole grown-ass men with full cocktails just smooth walk out the bar.
Yeah, but also...
And then you choose to, like, chase them down the street. Because they had time to go around the corner and pee.
That's true, but people... are messy. They try to sneak things out.
Yes, they do. But I'm just saying it's not like they walked down, because Precinct is like an upstairs bar. So you have to go down a long stairwell and then you walk down a long hallway. And usually there's someone at the street manning the door to get access to that hallway. So it's like they had to walk out of the exit of the bar, go down two flights of steps, walk down a long hallway. Then there's a person who should be at the door who didn't catch them. Then they had time to walk around, go take a long piss, and then continue walking down the street. And then someone chose to grab them. That just feels like y'all doing too much. Y'all doing too much. But maybe that's just my personality. From my perspective, I feel like this situation makes the bar seem real petty. And the fact that there's a face to it, like this bar manager's on the news trying to act like this isn't kind of unfortunate, but like we're going to teach someone a lesson. Mm-hmm. That would be enough for me to say, I wouldn't want to support Precinct if this is how they.
Wow.
Also, your bathrooms aren't clean half the time. You know what I mean? Like shit, me peeing on the street is probably easier than peeing in that bathroom. All the other shit that goes on in that bathroom, but I can't pee on the street right, like everybody else. I'm not at all saying that it's okay to pee on the street, but hey, sometimes I have to pee and there are no bathrooms anywhere. And so, yeah, I'll get out of my car. If you ever see me standing next to a gray BMW, I'm probably peeing.
This is all bruised egos. This is what this is.
Okay. I went on too long for that. Let's take a break. After my rant last week, I think about McDonald's wanting to hold my phone. Was that last week?
That was longer than that.
Or was that 2 weeks? Whatever. I received several messages, some of them saying that I was being nitpicky and that if I don't want someone to hold my phone, I should just use the card. And I'm going to push back on that a little bit because contactless payment, which is what everyone's offering, is supposed to be that no one's supposed to touch my shit. I can just tap my thing and only my grubby hands are on it. So I feel like that argument's like, but you're advertising that I don't have to let someone touch my stuff. So me just being like, well, here, take my phone or here, take my card, kind of defeats the purpose. Like,
It does, but you do get nitpicky about some things.
I do.
But you're saying makes sense, and I don't want people touching my shit either, but I think I remember talking about this at the time with you. It's just like, I'm also more of the type of like, whatever, I just need to get out of here.
So, sure, but I...
Which doesn't always serve me well either.
I do feel like we need to hold people to a higher standard in every work. Like I just feel like no one does, like, I don't want to say no one, but I just find more and more people aren't doing a good job. Like, well, no one's thorough.
That's been the case.
Yeah. Right. But it's like, who, so then how do we combat that if we can't hold anyone to not even a higher standard? You know, when you get your review at work and it's like meet expectations, people aren't even meeting expectations. I'm not asking you to go above and beyond. I'm asking you to do exactly what this place you signed up to work for is offering me. Uh-huh. So the fact that now everyone acts like doing the bare minimum, which is not even the bare minimum, because bare minimum would be meets expectations. You're doing less than expected and then still complaining and disgruntled. And I don't know.
Although we did go eat out somewhere where I was impressed with the service.
Oh, well, let's segue into that. We went to a cheeseburger restaurant or a burger restaurant called Hi Ho.
Is it Hi Ho or Hi Hi?
It's H-I-H-O.
It is Hi-Ho? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and Hi-Hi is a place in Minneapolis. Okay.
And it's a chain. There are several locations. We went to the one in Studio City, which happens to be in the shops at Sportsman's Lodge, which we had never been to. It's on Ventura Boulevard. It's really quite nice. There's an Erewhon in there. There's some nice, like, dessert shops.
You know, you got some white people with money when there's an Erewhon.
Yeah. So I felt real at home there. No, but yeah, I really liked it. But the person who assisted us there really went above and beyond.
Oh yeah.
So, you know.
And the food was good.
The food was fine. It was those, not unlike that burger place we went to that was voted like LA's best burger, where they do like the smashed meat. The pricing at Hi Ho is more reasonable. I will say though, like, you know, we each had a burger and some fries and like some key lime pie, and I was still kind of hungry. Those burgers were small. And we got doubles.
Yeah.
Although he did explain, the person who assisted us, that because they're flatter, you know, a double's really not. But yeah, I would definitely go back there again. And then there was like a pizza place next door that we want to try. Lastly, Nick discovered there's this brand of babka by Green's Homestyle. That shit is so good.
Yeah.
Green's Homestyle babka. I really like that. And I love arugula. Some good arugula.
And petitza.
Oh, and petitza. Your mom every Christmas sends some from this person in northern Minnesota who makes it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, your mom has two people who makes it.
Yeah.
And she'll send one from each. Oh, that shit is so good.
Yeah, but that's like Scandinavian. Babka is Jewish.
Oh, my God. This goddamn babka is so good. This morning, I used some of it. Well, some of it. I bought a new loaf. I used this Green's Homestyle babka to make French toast. That felt a little excessive, but it was tasty to me.
It's good. Yeah. It was rich. It was very rich.
Very rich. Moving on to films released we didn't cover. Arthur the King.
Finally, Mark Wahlberg has a co-star he can get along with.
A dog?
Yeah.
We saw that trailer, and of course, who doesn't love a dog?
Right.
So I thought, oh, I would watch this for the dog.
Simon Shellen Jones is the director. I don't know. I wasn't really interested in watching it.
Yeah, maybe if it's on streaming, or maybe I'll go watch it with my mom if it's on Netflix or something. The Animal Kingdom.
This was directed by Thomas Cayley. I think it opened the In Certain Regards section of Cannes last year. I did watch it over the past week. It doesn't really work in a lot of ways, but I think there's some interesting things going on, but I have to say, I really didn't like it. but it's about a father and son. We're living in a world where people are reverting to into different species of animals.
Oh.
And this father and son, the mother slash wife has become, I forget what kind of animal now. And they can't take care of them anymore because
like a full on animal.
Yeah. They like become a full on animal. Oh. So it's like they have to be hospitalized.
Damn.
And so she's being transported with other people suffering from this, and there's an accident. They get out in the wild. So the father and son are looking for this, mother, but and the father's played by Romain Duris, and Paul Kircher is the son, who is the child of Irene Jacob. And then Adele Exarchopoulos is a cop that somehow is invested with them on the sidelines, but her plot that doesn't make any goddamn sense to me. And then Tom Mercier from Synonyms is this person turning into a bird that befriends the main kid. I didn't really care for it.
It sounds interesting.
It sounds interesting, but it just, I don't think it worked. And it's from it's a sophomore film from this director whose debut was a huge hit out of Cannes in 2014. The English language title was Love at First Fight with Adele Haenel. But yeah.
Club Zero.
This I would have been interested in if we had had the time. I didn't love it. I saw it at Cannes last year in competition. It's from Jessica Hausner, who's a director I quite like, Austrian. This stars Mia Wasikowska. She's a new teacher that gets hired for this post at a school that teaches eating classes and conscious eating. So it's like almost like a fat camp, kind of. But there's a lot of it that just really didn't work for me.
Exuma?
This is a horror film from South Korea directed by Jang Jae-hoon. It's something about, as the title suggests, something's being exhumed. A grave plot being moved somewhere else, I think I read. But it stars Choi Min-sik, who most people, if you watch South Korean cinema, should recognize from Oldboy.
Knox Goes Away.
Michael Keaton directed this, in which he stars alongside Al Pacino and Marcia Gay Harden. And I think he is playing a hitman or something that has dementia.
On the Adamant?
Yes. Nicolas Philibert directed this documentary that, to everybody's great surprise, won the Berlin Film Festival in 2023 with the Kristen Stewart-led jury.
Oh.
Because it's a very old-fashioned documentary. And there's nothing innately wrong with it. I just still can't believe that this won. And not to dissuade anybody from watching it, it's just very old school, but it's about these patients and caregivers that there's this basically the psychiatric center that's on a boat in the middle of the Seine, and people just go get on and off every day, and there are music classes and things they can do, and the other mental health things. And
yeah. Nice. Lastly, Prey, P-R-E-Y.
I still kind of want to watch this, but I asked for a screener, and the publicist told me that they are not seeking reviews for this title.
Kiss my ass.
They said, no, we don't want to know what you think.
Well, we knew from the trailer this was going to be some bullshit, so I actually still might pay to see it and maybe review it.
Ryan Phillippe, Emil Hirsch, and Mina Suvari, and it's a faith-based movie about people defending themselves against lions. Is that right?
That sounds right. Projects of interest: The Man with a Bag.
You remember Adam Shankman, right?
I'd have to look him up.
He always makes me uncomfortable because he's often on RuPaul's Drag Race, right?
Yes, he's the guy who did. The movie with Ricky Lake?
The Hairspray remake.
Yeah.
But he also did.
But that's not with Ricky Lake.
He also did Disenchanted. Well, Ricky Lake's in the original, John Waters.
But who plays that character in the one he directed?
I don't remember.
Because it's John Travolta, Queen Latifah. Uh-huh. Isn't Zac Efron in it?
Michelle Pfeiffer, I think, right?
Oh. Anyway, sorry.
Is it Michelle Pfeiffer in that?
I don't know.
Anyway, he always makes me uncomfortable on Drag Race because he reminds me of somebody I don't like. But he's directing a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger about playing Santa. So another Christmas movie with him. And I think something to do with a robbery. I don't know.
Oh, there's breaking news that two Kenyans won the elite race for the LA Marathon. So a Kenyan won for the men's. And then a Kenyan one for the women's.
God, the Kenyans are always winning.
Good for them.
Some run, they can run.
Them some running ass people.
Damn.
On Patreon this past week, we reviewed the 1984 Dune, the film Amadeus, and finally Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, if anyone's interested.
Yes.
And then on our website, fishjellyfilms.com, Nick wrote a review for the new Anthony Hopkins film, One Life. So yes. People can read that.
Because Joseph had no interest in seeing it.
No, I did not. But I do have an interest in taking a break. This week's secret film was my choice, and I chose the 2015 Irish documentary film, The Queen of Ireland, in honor of St. Paddy's Day. Which is kind of problematic, because then you think like on Cinco de Mayo, just pick any Mexican shit, I don't know. No, I wanted to choose something that had the word like Ireland in it. I know there's a film called St. Paddy's Day, but that looked kind of whack. So to be honest, I kind of chose this as like a little bit of a joke, but it turned out to be quite good. So I'm glad I watched it.
Yes. Same.
What is it about? It's a documentary about the life of Irish drag queen Panty Bliss. So it, of course, from that description and the poster, I thought it would be some sort of fluffy thing, but actually it was quite meaningful. So the drag queen Panty Bliss is portrayed by a man named Rory O'Neill. So why did he get a documentary? Because back in 2014, he's quite notable in Ireland as a drag performer. Mm-hmm. And he was on like... I guess there's like the main Irish like broadcaster is RTE, and they have like a late night talk show, and Rory went on, and during part of the interview, he talked about homophobia, and he kind of called homophobes out, basically saying like, everyone knows a gay person. So maybe people would be less homophobic if they just basically saying like, how can you be homophobic when you know someone who is gay? And in fact, people who do know gay people tend to be more understanding. So, you know, here's to that. I thought his words were very sort of benign, but there was a huge backlash. Not unlike when Janet Jackson's breast was exposed during the Super Bowl, people like upset viewers wrote in to complain about the subject matter Rory was talking about. And that station, RTE, paid out a settlement to just keep these people happy. They paid like 85,000 euro. So there was a huge backlash to that. Like, why would this station do this? What kind of precedent is it sending? Like, the viewers felt like it's saying a lot about Ireland that they're not accepting. So some time passes, and Rory, as Panty Bliss, does this like show where she gives a speech, and it was recorded, and that speech she gives goes viral. Like, all these celebrities are tweeting about it, and she ends up kind of becoming the face for marriage equality in Ireland. So there was a proposition that was added in 2015 that resulted in Ireland being the first country to have marriage equality by way of the popular vote. Mm-hmm. So of course, for those of you who are a little confused, because we had same-sex marriage in the US before then, that was because of the Supreme Court. But Ireland is the first to have it based off of the popular vote. And this drag queen is considered to be one of the faces of that movement. So the documentary, which is quite short, it's under 90 minutes, more than half of it is sort of about that interview, the backlash, and then her, like, at a point she ends up receiving like Ireland's Person of the Year award. So sort of how she turned all of that into something positive. But I thought Rory O'Neill, the drag queen, he was very fascinating, very smart.
Yeah, very smart, very funny.
Yeah.
Very polished. But I don't, oh, and you're forgetting that he made this speech at a theater that went viral.
I did say that.
Oh, you did say that.
Sorry. Yeah.
But went viral because of like Graham Norton and RuPaul and
Paul, who's the one, Stephen Fry, who actually gave Rory his
the award,
Person of the Year award. Yeah. The speech he gave at the theater was kind of like, it wasn't meant to be televised. It was just someone recording it.
Yeah.
And then that clip went viral, but I'm just going to go through my notes. So when the documentary started, we get sort of, first of all, Panty Bliss, the drag queen, is beautiful. Mm-hmm. She looks like, who did you say?
I said Missy Pyle.
Missy Pyle. Yeah. She's pretty. Mm-hmm. Has a great body. At the time of filming, I believe she was like in her mid 40s. But yeah, so Rory keeps it together. But we get Panty sort of talking like a dramatization. So I was a little concerned, like, what is this? What are we watching? But very quickly, I was put at ease because we started learning about Rory's upbringing. And I said immediately that this felt like All of Us Strangers. Uh-huh. And then it's funny because Andrew Scott is in this documentary. He's at the rally.
And he hugs Panty, yeah.
And actually, yeah, we get him on camera hugging Panty. But we also hear from Senator David Norris, who I guess was like the first out Irish politician. Uh-huh. Who he said back then, because it looks like it was the 70s, he was dubbed the Irish homosexual, mm-hmm. since he was the only one. But yeah, I thought the opening of that history and the decriminalization and was very interesting. And then we, of course, the obligatory, like, how queer bashing and perpetrators go unpunished. I thought all of that was very effective. And then we see Rory with his friends, all of whom he's known for a very long time. And I thought that seemed... I wouldn't mind a documentary about Rory and mm-hmm. his life before all of this, because we see that he started drag and then ended up having a chance to go to Tokyo to do drag. And this is where he met a friend named Angelo. And the stories they tell sound like extremely interesting about their time in Japan and how they crafted, how Rory crafted his drag character Panty.
Well, and they both had names that the Japanese couldn't pronounce.
Yeah, that was like, funny. So their original drag names had L's in them.
Lurline and Letitia.
And so because the Japanese had a hard time saying those names, they changed their names to a collective, Candy Panty. But then the Japanese were separating their names, like as if they were two different people.
Yeah.
So that's how she got her name Panty. But I thought the... like the footage they have from that, and I'm sure the stories they would have to tell were so fascinating. We also learned that Rory O'Neill owns a gay bar called Panty Bar, which I also would love to hear more about. The film doesn't really go into, or the documentary doesn't really go into his sort of business life, but he seems like he's done well for himself.
Yeah.
Something I was very impressed by is Rory has a graphic design background. And his creative director, who's also like a best friend he's had since college, I believe the man's name is Niall.
Yes.
It also has a design background. And the imagery we see, like the photos and the concepts they come up with, are so impressive. Like so, so impressive. And Rory talks about his influences being RuPaul and Lady Bunny, like a version of that sort of like glamour puss drag. But gosh, the visuals they were showing, you know, these are before Drag Race.
Yeah.
Are like so, so impressive.
Yeah, it's a, I'd remember this documentary. Oh, God. I almost watched it on something that I don't ascribe to anymore, but
I should mention we watched it for free on Freevee, so it is available.
but back in 2016 when it came out, and I had a screener for it that I never watched. But so I've heard of the documentary, but I'm very unfamiliar with this drag queen, which seems kind of shocking.
Yeah, I was shocked because he's had a pretty amazing career, and still seems to be doing quite well. So it's just interesting.
Well, it's just funny how, to me, Drag Race is something that, I mean, it's a machine now, but it eclipses everything rather than highlights.
Yeah, Drag Race is kind of has it's almost like it's painted over an entire subculture, and like this is the new portrait of what drag, like only this is drag.
And if you are not affiliated with it, are you drag?
Right. But there are still people out there kicking. So some things we learn about Rory is that he does become HIV positive, or that he is HIV positive when he tells a story about when he found out. I thought that was, you know, it's always a powerful story to hear, but he describes it as like on that day, he distinctly recalls seeing everyone like out on the streets going shopping and just doing their ordinary thing, having an ordinary day. And then he says, but for me, it wasn't an ordinary day.
Yeah.
For some reason, that really struck me. Then he talks about, you know, trying to date is difficult because he's not only HIV positive, but a drag queen, which of course made me think of Q from the current season of Drag Race.
Yeah.
And how difficult that must be, which is a shame too, because Rory out of drag seems like a really, he seems like he'd be a catch. We see that Rory's parents, who are from this very small town somewhere in Ireland called Ballinrobe, mm-hmm. that after all of the positive press that he's received, he decides to do a show in Ballinrobe as kind of a full circle moment, because in the opening of the documentary, he talks about how all he could ever think about was leaving that small minded place. So how wonderful is it that he can now return and put on a show and people will see him and enjoy him. And I thought that that was very sweet. Both of his parents are still alive. And I thought it was really sweet seeing them, because they do seem to be somewhat traditional, but then it's like they've found a way to balance like a love and appreciation for their gay drag queen son, mm-hmm. while still holding on to their values, which always makes me think like people like them should be people we highlight as well. Because they're such a good example of like respecting and acknowledging other people doesn't have to take away from what you believe and how you behave. Like,
well, and he says something about how he has guilt over like all of the stuff that he has brought them because of his life hasn't been positive. So it's nice to, he gets emotional talking about bring this back to them. It's something good.
I thought that was a sweet moment.
But, and you had made some comment during that about how, like, oh, you know, the journeys your children take you on. It's like, but I feel like if you really want to be a parent, that's something you need to be open to, is that this little human is going to do unpredictable things.
Well, yeah. I mean, what do I know about having children except having been one? But I think that it seems like if I did, I would expect that this little person is going to take me on a journey. And isn't that part of why I wanted to do this was to be there for them and to experience it and support them? And how exciting would it be to make a little person who's not going to be a copy of me? And
yeah,
you know, I mean, that's what my heart tells me right now. But again, I'm not a parent, so I don't know. It just seems so sad when parents just want to reject their kids, like
over something so superfluous, like.
Well, because then it's like, couldn't, I don't know. It just seems like it'd be fun to me. Like, you could live vicariously through your kid. Like, maybe that would never have been an option for you and you don't feel these things. But how fun would it be to?
Well, you see all these, like, using Drag Race again as an example, these young queer kids that have had supportive parents and that from a very young age are kind of very well advanced creatively. And it's like, that's what you get when you have that kind of support.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to be a self-actualized being much earlier.
Yeah, how cool would it be to see like the things that this little mind can do if they weren't made to feel like they're a disappointment? Or, but again, I don't know. And the other thing too is like, they're also very valid concerns, right? I mean, if I'm a parent and I have an impression of like what gay life is like, and then my 17-year-old tells me they're gay, I might be very concerned, like, well, what about AIDS and what about drugs? And like, they're always going to be alone. These people don't seem happy. Like, maybe not accurate things to put on something, but also valid. Like, if you don't know, and like, that's your only impression, I can see why some parents might react in a way that doesn't seem. Because the other thing too is, especially younger people, if you don't say the exact thing they want to hear, if you use the wrong language, anything, it's like, you're not accepting me. And I'm going to like remove you from my life.
Well, that's
I don't know that I think that's fair.
That's either. A different extreme that is also a problem. But it's something else you and I talked about after watching this was Panty is talking about her early initiation to the gay underground in Dublin and how she spent most of her life trying to get back to that feeling.
Oh, yeah. That was something I wanted to end on, that this idea of recapturing the excitement of our gay youth. Because for our straight counterparts, they get to explore a lot of these things as teenagers, right? Like in high school and college, like they get to date and go through all those awkward things and go through the party phases where they don't feel so out of place. But for a lot of gay people, that doesn't happen until you're out of school, maybe out of college even. Because a lot of gay guys I know, they were still playing that game in college of like, well, I have my straight friends and I do all this crazy shit and maybe do stuff on the side, but like, I still don't feel free. So then you think, okay, so now you're 24 experiencing things that you probably would have experienced during your more developmental years. So now you're holding on to, because I think people, because you know, I think in this documentary, he says it's like how men tend to dress. Is it him who says that? Or was that something else?
That's something else.
We were listening to something where it was like men tend to dress like how they felt they looked their best.
Jerry Seinfeld. That's a Neil Brennan.
That's right. And then I always say that women with their hair tend to keep their hair the way they thought they looked their best, which is usually like around 30. So that's why you see a lot of like 60-year-old women with these dated hairdos. And it's like, well, because they're trying to mimic when they thought they looked their best. And I think when you think about like your social life, for a lot of my impressions for a lot of straight people, they got to refine that during their developmental stages. So by the time they're in their 20s, they feel pretty comfortable in their skin in that way. But for a lot of gay people, we don't. And I think when you think about going back to when you felt most like desirable and had the most fun, it's also during a time where you're like emotionally stunted.
Right.
So not only are, so then you think like, well, how does that apply to gay men? It's like, well, now you have these 40-year-old gay men who not only want to look like they're in their early 20s, but they're acting like they
are.
That's probably a controversial statement, but
no, there's something to be said about it. But it's learning to, it's okay to pursue some of those feelings from then, but what they were doing for you then is never going to be the same as what they would do for you now. Like, what are you looking for? What is the purpose? Because I think it still is powerful for me to be amongst other gay people at the gay bar. Like, that is just something that I love doing in an atmosphere I love being in. But how, what it does for me has changed drastically.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, I can go on and on about that, but I thought hearing also Rory and like his friend group, they're all very well preserved, which I found kind of interesting that they weren't, you know, they weren't rode hard and put up wet.
Unlike, who does the announcements on Johnny McGovern now on Hey Queen?
Oh, Kevin Aviance.
Kevin Aviance. Oh my God.
I kind of feel uncomfortable. Like, why do they trot him out there like that?
They don't have somebody somebody else needs to do his makeup or something.
Yeah. But no, I was very like Rory, his like Angelo, his best friend, a couple of other friends who are all like in their 40s, and they all look like, yeah, they've been taking their vitamins and getting sleep. I don't know. But my final note was that the documentary ends with Panty Bliss doing a lip sync for her life to Jennifer Holliday's And I Am Telling You. Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite where it needed to be, but
it was sweet.
She looked more like she was having withdrawals.
Yes.
Like she was having the DTs, but...
As I said, Jennifer Holliday often looks that way too.
That's true. I would recommend this. What would you give The Queen of Ireland?
3.5.
I would give it 3.5. I thought it was very good. It is very standard issue.
Yes.
Like, here's a notable person who would want to highlight this major thing they did. So, you know, first half is them personally and their background, and the second half is what they did. But Rory O'Neill seems like a pretty remarkable person. That's all I have for the Queen of Ireland.
Uh-huh.
What does St. Paddy's Day mean to you?
Well, it means not going to an Irish bar or pub. That's what it means.
Well, certainly not today.
Yeah, yes.
We wouldn't be able to get in. I always like some fish and chips. I don't really own anything green.
We have a green screen.
We have a green screen, and I have those ugly green sweatpants I wear every day.
Yeah, your Kermit the Frog sweatpants.
But, yeah.
Well, we're supposed to see Jean Dielman.
What? What's that?
You agreed to see it.
When?
It's today.
No.
Yes.
We can't go to a movie today.
Well.
Jean Dielman?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
That's
the name of a movie?
Yeah, it was recently named by Sight and Sound as the... I have the tickets printed out right there on the desk.
Wait, Jean? How do you spell that?
Do I need to refer you to the text messages where you said you'd agreed to see it?
What kind of... because you made me feel like I had to see it.
I think we have to see it, but we were going to do a Patreon thing.
But I had no interest in it. But then I said, if you want me to see it, I'll see it.
Oh, now it's a problem.
No, it's not a problem, but now I'm remembering that it was one of those that I felt like, let's see if he makes a wise choice. Because you like to say, I wish we would have made time to see this without any regard for whether or not I'd want to. So then I thought,
we have been asked to review on it before, to speak on it.
Oh, this is not a new movie.
No.
Well, you're not feeling well.
Sight and Sound recently named it the best film ever made.
What year is it?
Like 75, I think. My God.
All done?
Well, there's that and a bunch of stuff to see this week, of course.
Yeah. Well, I guess we should probably stop recording then.
God damn.
So I can get prepared for the day. All good?
Yes.
Ta-ta. Thank you.